Drones everywhere. Are we really safe? Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principles and Policy. And along with me today is our co-host, the Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst and very good friend, Chuck Michaelis.
Hoping not to be caught droning on today.
Well, I think it's too late for that for the both of us, Chuck. But if you were with us yesterday, you know we started talking about a subject that we've talked about on this program before, and that is the usage of unmanned aerial reconnaissance flights, or what we lovingly call drones. We've talked about drones before. Drones were implicated in the death of Anwar al-Awlaki when the CIA flew a Predator drone and killed him and some of his retinue in Yemen. We've talked about drones being used here domestically for police surveillance and investigation. In the case of Rodney Brassart, we just talked about yesterday, the North Dakota farmer who decided he was going to keep some cows that wandered onto his property, and the sheriff decided they didn't like the fact that he was trying to set up a law unto himself, and so called in the SWAT team, and the SWAT team called Homeland Security, and all of a sudden he's being found with a use of a Predator drone. But it also led to the idea, Chuck, that, well, back late December, early January, President Barack Obama signed into law the Federal Aviation Administration Reauthorization Act. We talked about that on the previous program. And, folks, for all of these previous programs that I'm talking about, you can go visit our website at principledpolicy.com. And we have the archives of our past shows. And I believe they're indexed, so you could just type in a search and boom, and you can pull up the ones that you were looking for. If you want to go back and listen to some of the ones we did. But what we have now is because the FAA Reauthorization Act has been signed into law, there's a provision that beginning on the 14th of May of this year, the federal government must issue permits specifically to law enforcement agencies in order for them to be able to have and to fly in domestic airspace unmanned aerial reconnaissance planes. In other words, drones. Now, these drones could be, as a CBS News report talked about and Chuck and I had listened to offline, as small as a hummingbird. And yes, folks, they actually have a drone that is in the shape of a hummingbird that's about that big with the little wings that are flapping back and forth quickly. But it is an electronic surveillance aircraft.
It's got a camera in it.
It has a camera in it, and it flies, but it looks like a hummingbird. Gee, Chuck, I don't think they're going to be using that in commercial or in, like, you know, bank heists and things of that nature. That sounds to me more like domestic surveillance of somebody in their own private residence.
Okay, here's one of the problems. These things are probably the price. You can imagine the price is going to come down.
Sure, as they develop.
You've got something that does, if you're not paying real close attention, does kind of resemble a bird. And unfortunately, I can foresee things like peeping toms.
Yes.
Getting hold of one of these things and sending them around an apartment complex to...
Or someone who's a pedophile using something similar to fly it into a schoolyard.
Yeah.
Or the possibilities for mischief with this is absolutely endless.
You're right.
Now, of course, the feds would argue, well, no, we're going to be very tight on the number of permits that we issue.
Right,
I'm sorry,
right.
But you know what? I don't believe criminals care about permits, do they, Chuck?
I'm going to ask you a question. Have you ever heard of CB radio?
Yes, I have. Yes, I have. I know that's an antiquated term that we're using in today's microwave technology.
In the late 1970s, there has been a requirement always since the Citizens Band was created for licensure.
That's right.
On that band. But let me tell you, it was anarchy in the late 1970s. Nobody ever had a license.
Well, of course not. And the same thing's happening now with those who are operating, well, ham radio. You know, we'll issue so many licenses, but honestly, Chuck, I mean, there was a point in time where you can flip it on, you can hear just about anything coming from anywhere on shortwave radio.
Oh, well, sure. In the United States, they keep a pretty tight grip inside the borders on that.
Yes, exactly. Inside the borders.
Inside the borders. And that's the magic, because as you and I discussed off air, there are people who are running things like websites that bypass copyright law.
Yes.
By being offshore.
And we're going to talk some more about that later.
Yeah.
But there are a lot of things that can be done with these things.
Exactly. You name it.
And if you and I can sit here and, quote-unquote, put on our analyst hat and figure out numerous ways in which you can basically use these things for nefarious purposes. Now, folks, don't think ill of us, because we're not necessarily evil people.
We're not suggesting
We're just born that way.
Yeah, we're not. We're not suggesting you run out and do these things. We're telling you the possibilities that two guys who sit around and analyze public policy have come up with. Believe me, the criminal mind, if it was actually applied to doing something productive, technology would be advanced far more rapidly than it is now.
But the fact is,
instead, it's applied to stealing things from you.
Yeah, well, and Chuck, though, we sitting here in studio are not the only two analysts who are having some concerns about this issue. Because, folks, the FAA Reauthorization Act is also going to allow private, commercial, and non-commercial licenses to be issued to various entities to fly unmanned drones all over American airspace. It doesn't matter if it's law enforcement or not. Matter of fact, our own state legislature passed a resolution, and yes, they finally passed it, got it through the House too, with very little opposition, to basically beg Congress to pick Wright-Patt Air Force Base as one of the testing grounds for these unmanned aerial reconnaissance flights. Now, we're not the only ones, because a gentleman by the name of John Villasenor, who is a fellow at the Brookings Institution, basically brought up an interesting and somewhat disturbing thought. And he said, basically, with the FAA ready to open American airspace up to these unmanned planes, that he believes that the government should be developing drone jamming technology to prevent these unmanned aircraft from carrying out terrorist attacks on American soil. Now, okay, Chuck, we know that the word terrorist attacks can have a very broad definition in relation to what we do here in this country, but, you know, I think he's got a really good point here, because you and I just sat here and just riffed for about 3 minutes on all of the nefarious things that somebody can do.
Sure.
What happens if it's a nation with deep resources and a deep hatred for things American? What happens if, say, whether it's Al-Qaeda, or it's the Iranians, or it's the Chinese, or it's the North Koreans, or anybody that we tick off on a regular basis around the globe, decides, you know what, we're going to play that game too. And of course, they can put their front people up, and they can file their dummy corporations, and those corporations can file and probably get the permits from the federal government. But what happens if, instead of at Fort Hood, you have a single individual with guns, that you have a single individual who may have 5 or 6 unmanned drones that are filled with high explosives or worse, flying them into military bases, flying them into hospitals, flying them into anywhere?
Sure, load them up with C4, fly them into something. The possibilities are endless, Barry.
Yes, they are.
There's another problem here, and that is the psychological issue. You know, when you're standing there on a battlefield and you can see the enemy and you're shooting at him, he is a man.
Yes, that's right.
And it's not so easy to look at a man and kill him.
If you studied any of military history, you know that the more our technology has increased and the bigger distances we have between people, the more likely somebody is to push the button or pull the trigger. American Revolution, which I hate using that term revolution because that's a revolt and a rebellion against God's order. It was the American War for Independence. There were many, when they cleared battlefields, where the guns had never been fired.
Same in the Civil War.
Civil War. There were times when they found guns at 8 or 9
loads,
full loads that had been jammed down the barrel because the person was going through the motions because he couldn't bring himself to shoot. The person who across the way who may be a relative.
Yep. It might be a cousin, might be a brother, might be an
uncle. Father. Yeah. It could be anybody.
Yeah.
So the farther we've got away and the more we've dehumanized our military, and that includes our law enforcement, from understanding that this is a human interaction we're dealing with the application of high explosives, we have an interesting issue here.
Well, you couple it with desensitization that we've gone through with the use of things like video games.
Yes.
Think about young people who sit around. I mean, not just young people. I'm 55. I've played video games, and some of them, Wolfenstein, some of the early stuff.
Castle Wolfenstein. I remember that, yes.
Wolfenstein and several of them were basically you had to go get weapons and kill these monsters.
Or people.
Or people.
Yeah, those are called first-person shooter games.
And the fact is, the more you make it like a video game, the less sensitive the person at the controls, maybe 1,000 miles away, is to actually using the fire button.
Well, and it's interesting, Chuck, because I think you have what's considered a negative convergence here, because First, we started with video games that had you simulate being a, shooting another person. Then, as the technology increased, we started making the video games look more like real life. I mean, that's the reason why things like Call of Duty and other ones are huge sellers right now, because when somebody plays that in the first person, it's like you're in one of those environments. You know, if you can shut out everything around you, you feel like you're walking down a city street just with high-caliber weaponry in your hands and shooting anything that pops out at you.
There are entire websites that are designed around, quote-unquote, Second Life.
Yes.
And if you go into some of those Second Life sites, I've been on the peripheries just to see what's going on. It's a little frightening because there are some pretty dark Second Lives out there that people want to live. And some pretty perverse ones. And honestly, the more you make it like a video game, the more likely people are to completely be desensitized to the things that are actually going on. It's not real. You're firing a machine gun or a 20 millimeter cannon or blowing up C4 from a distance. It's really not real because you can't see it. You can't feel it. You don't feel the impact.
You don't see the after effects.
That's right. You don't see the after effects. You might see them on the news later. But again, even that is a sort of a two-dimensional, ooh, that's nasty. I don't want to see that. And you click over and watch reruns of, you know, Leave It to Beaver or something. But the fact is that that's a very dangerous situation to be put in. Our human emotions and psychology have not caught up with the technology. The technology is advancing way too fast.
Well, and that's true, Chuck, and it's interesting you say this, because actually about 7 years ago in 2005, and this is according to an article out of U.S. News and World Report that was dated April the 5th, that in 2005, the Institute for Defense Analyses wrote a 44-page report detailing the potential for drones being controlled by those who are hostile to the U.S. And basically says that Al-Qaeda and the FARC in Colombia, which is a paramilitary organization, have both experimented with unmanned weaponry. And actually, in late 2010, we had a drone crash in El Paso, Texas. Big problem? It was being operated by the Mexican Federal Police, who had flown across the Mexican-U.S. border with it, and the plane crashed in Texas. Now, what would happen if we have an issue where a foreign national or a foreign country, such as Mexico, decides that this time around we're going to fly that little drone? And these drones can be as small, like I said, as a hummingbird, or as big as a small Cessna, probably.
Oh, no.
Or maybe even bigger.
Actually, Barry, there are some that are being worked on that are 747 size.
Well, can you imagine an unmanned 747 in U.S. airspace being flown by someone outside the country? Because, as we're going to talk about tomorrow on the program, there are individuals and entities that are looking at using these things so that they can get thousands of miles away from law enforcement.
Right. Now, I think we should say we're not necessarily against the use of drones.
Well, not necessarily, but I am against the use of them in American airspace for surveillance against American citizens who are otherwise law-abiding citizens.
Well, here's a place where I agree with the ACLU, one of those few places. And this is from this article, and then we'll post the link to. The cost of flying a surveillance airplane or helicopter is several magnitudes above that of a battery-powered drone, and that's one of those bigger planes. The UAVs can stay aloft for long periods of time, and unlike helicopters, they can be easily detected. People behave differently when they know they're under surveillance, says Catherine Crump of the American Civil Liberties Union.
Yes.
We are not opposed to the domestic use of drones, but we're concerned that they could become tools of general or pervasive surveillance. That's my fear. My fear is that this is going to become like 1984, the telescreen you can never turn off.
And Big Brother always watching you.
Always watch. This is my concern over, for instance, red light cameras.
Yes.
And cameras on every corner. I've been to London. Barry, everywhere you go in London, and I mean everywhere, there's a camera.
Yeah, everywhere. Well, if you start looking around here in our country, Chuck, there are cameras, whether it be red light cameras or whether it be other ones. You start looking around, we're getting there.
Very, very quickly.
Especially in the cities, but even outside the cities. You'll be driving down Easy Pass and other things for trucks. How easy it is to convert those to video so that you can watch cars coming down the highway. We're going to talk about another problem with some of these drone issues on tomorrow's program, so stay with us again.
Join us tomorrow for another Principles and Policies.